So let's start with Heather. We'll turn to Heather Mayer now. And the reason for starting with Heather is her new book is it's just out now, and the book launch isn't even until late November. So that's something to look forward to at Powell's book launch, November 28th, I believe, right?
Yes.
It's a ways in the future. So Heather, it's great having you here, and congratulations on this beautiful new book.
Thank you so much.
Which apparently, as distinct from other people who've interviewed you, I've actually read.
Yes.
And so let us start with that. There's a question that I've had for many years in looking over the literature about the Wobblies. The Wobblies are the members of the Industrial Workers of the World. And you can tell from the title of Heather's book, it's Beyond the Rebel Girl, Women and the IWW in the Pacific Northwest, 1905 to 1924. So she's focusing on women in connection with the industrial workers of the world, and sometimes we'll call them the Wobblies, another name for the members of the industrial workers of the world. A question I've had in looking at that literature over all the years is there's a lot of reference to Wobbly halls, to halls rented or even owned by the IWW, and the question is what goes on in them. And it's a very important question for us today as we think of building kind of alternative values, alternative sensibilities to those that predominate. But the literature is very lacking on what actually happened in those halls. Part of the reason for that is, of course, the raids and the vigilante and then government raids that destroyed halls and destroyed records. So there's some things we don't know about the halls and the activities in the halls. But much of the literature focuses on itinerant workers who were able to bunk there. That would be an entirely male kind of atmosphere. And it makes it sound as if the halls themselves wouldn't necessarily be friendly to women, to children. The book, for me, went a long way toward answering the question I've had all this time. What actually happens, and to whom were the halls friendly?
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that intrigued me at first as well, is, you know, what happened in these places? And the most information we have is on the Spokane, Washington Hall, because that's where the newspaper, The Industrial Worker, was based out of Spokane. And so it kind of, you know, had a little more info about their local news. But there were things, you know, it was a reading room, no smoking allowed in the reading room. They showed movies, they had a band, they had all kinds of picnics and socials, and it really sounded like more of a place where the community could come together.
You make the distinction, actually, between the town Wobblies and the family Wobblies and those itinerant male loggers, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, so much of the literature has focused on those men, but then when you look at what's happening in the cities, you know, you see a lot of Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so did this at the hall, and Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so. You know, you don't always get the wives' first names, which is frustrating. But it seemed like there was a lot more of, you know, husband and wife teams, families, children that lived in these cities. And, you know, they would have these big activities and support for strikes, all different kinds of things. But they weren't the ones coming in and out from the fields or the camps. They were stable.
It makes sense, then, that the halls would be targeted if you're trying to destroy not only an organization, but a different way of seeing the world, a different way of being in the world.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that became especially challenging during the crackdown on the Wobblies during World War I, is that you couldn't even enter a hall without being subject to arrest. You know, there were raids constantly. And so if you are, you know, a mother with children, how likely are you going to be taking your kids to see a movie at the Wobbly Hall, you know, if you could just be, you know, swept up in a raid?
Another one of the themes in the book, speaking about then repression, is the differential way that women and men were treated when they were swept up in raids. And that raises really interesting kinds of questions about, and did for the Wobblies themselves, of course, about whether to accept special treatment or not. Should women be treated differently from, well, say something more.
Well, when women got arrested, it ended up being really valuable for the Wobblies because they were released early. So they could go tell everybody what was going on. You know, during some of the free speech fights that the Wobblies had around the Northwest, you know, one woman was arrested maybe 6 or 7 times and keeps being let out, telling everybody what's going on, you know, going back out and being arrested. And so that kind of preferential treatment actually allowed them to spread the word of what was going on and what treatment was like in the facilities. But the IWW also rejected when women got lighter sentences. You know, they tried to say at least, you know, it's not fair that women should be treated the same as men.
You see some of the same kinds of those, that issue resonates even today. At least where I encounter it is also in health and safety kind of work, where there are really interesting kinds of splits. Should we make special provisions around health and safety for instance, women of reproductive age? But the consequences in doing so can also be an employer firing women, somehow thinking they're more vulnerable and leaving the male workers still exposed to the same kind of garbage and toxics. And
yeah, I mean, you see those kinds of arguments like, well, you know, women working in the trades and whatnot. But I mean, really, it's anything that's going to make a workplace safer for one person is going to make it safer for everybody. You know, so any changes would overall benefit a workforce.
Now, when women were charged, another interesting feature, not only were they let out earlier, I have learned from your book, but they were charged differently and in different kinds of terms. They were charged in terms of expectations somehow of what women should be like and women's roles in that society. Respectability is a big theme for you. Say more.
Yeah, that came up so frequently in looking at how women were either described in newspapers or how they were actually, you know, interrogated during court proceedings. It's about, you know, who did you live with? How long have you been married? What kind of relationships did you have? You know, things that had nothing to do with what they were actually arrested for. But it was all about proving the point that these were not women that should be respected. They were outsiders, you know, they believed in free love or, you know, all of these kinds of things, trying to look down on them and basically, you know, say that what they were doing didn't have meaning or wasn't important.
Including challenges to their visions of child rearing.
Yeah, that was a big thing in Spokane. Some of the boys that were selling the IWW newspapers were arrested. And one of the mothers took offense to the judges basically saying that women and children shouldn't be allowed in Wobbly Halls and no respectable woman would bring their child to an IWW hall. And the women the next day filled the courtroom and made the judge kind of, you know, issue an apology and saying basically, you know, we are respectable women. We have the right to raise our children as we see fit, and you can't persecute us for that.
And the halls themselves, of course, that has implications for how we understand the halls,
mm-hmm.
that the halls were appropriate places for raising kids as
mm-hmm.
well.
Yeah.
Well, I'd really like to hear what kind of movies they showed, but
they actually made a comment on that and said, unfortunately, there were no revolutionary films available, so they had to show comedies.
Okay. There are some themes that we will come back to later on. I want to ask you one quick question in kind of closing, though, because we'll come back to this as well. You make the repeated distinction between progressives and radicals in terms of visions for social change, visions for what should come out of social change, and the ways to act, the ways to organize. Say just a couple of words about that, and we'll enlarge it later on.
I think, you know, the female Wobblies that I encountered really made that distinction themselves a lot, to say, you know, these women, kind of middle class or progressive women, might support us on certain issues, like having a matron in the city jail, you know, or things like that. But when it comes down to an overall vision of reimagining society, that would be detrimental to them. You know, that's when they're no longer our allies. So the women kind of made that distinction themselves.
We'll see when we talk with Amy later on also, different visions of organizing that I think fall along the same kinds of lines. Just very quickly, I would characterize it, reading some of Amy's writings, as a vision of more top-down doing things for people, as distinct from working alongside people to make the changes themselves.
That happened most distinctly in the 1913 strike in Portland, Oregon, where there was this kind of progressive society that said, all right, we're going to solve this strike for you, and here's what we came up with. And the women were like, oh, that's not what we were asking for. That's not what we wanted. Nobody asked us. That was the headline in the newspaper, you know, nobody asked them. And, you know, yeah, solving problems for people.
And that was Oregon Canning, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Just, what would that be, about 5 blocks from where we are sitting.
Right.
As we speak,
mm-hmm.
right over here on Southeast Belmont, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, 10th and Belmont, I think.
Maybe
somewhere
even 8th.
Around there. Yeah,
we're on,
yeah.
In this cable studio, we're on Southeast 8th. Okay, thank you, Heather. We will come back and enlarge all these themes. Let's move to Steve.